Welcome to Tracks Cultures, the podcast dedicated to unraveling the intricacies of transitions across cultures. Whether you're a globetrotter embracing new cultures, an expat transitioning to life in a foreign land, or a supportive friend or family member, this podcast is your companion on the expedition through the exciting and sometimes challenging realms of culture shock and transition. I'm your host, Mike Piccinato, and I've been on my own cross-cultural journey, navigating the intricacies of culture shock, language barriers, and the joys and frustrations that come with embracing a new way of life. Much of what we do in this series will be framed by the book Transitions Across Cultures by Dr. Stephen W. Jones. Stephen and his wife, Jenny Jones, will be frequent guests on the show as we accompany them on their own cross-cultural journey as they leave their home and life in Minnesota to join me at Envision Berlin in Berlin, Germany. This is episode 13 of Tracks Cultures. This is a legacy podcast from Unterwegs, the En Route podcast being re-released as we build a focus channel for our conversations about transitions across cultures. The original episode was released on October 20th, 2021. Stephen and Jenny, welcome back for part two of our three-part series on culture shock. It was great last week to kind of be able to dive into understanding what culture shock is. And this week, we want to explore that topic a little bit more, maybe asking a few more personal questions so that we can really wrestle with it more from a personal point of view.
Yeah, sounds good.
And so one of the questions that I had is going back to these two different terms that we used last week, the idea of culture shocks and culture stress. What are some of the differences between those two that people might be able to understand if we put illustrations to them?
So I think one of the things that is helpful is just to maybe list a bunch of culturally stressful incidents is kind of what we're calling them. So things like when we go through the checkout line at the grocery store, there are a few different phrases that are often said. And basically, they're all different ways of asking, do you want a receipt? You know, when you first are here and you don't know what's being said, it's like, I'm supposed to respond to something and I don't know what it is. That's a culturally stressful incident. And then when you've figured out, oh, okay, this is the word for do you want a receipt? And then they use a different word for that the next time. It's like, wait, I thought I knew what was going on. That's a culturally stressful incident. You had one last week, right, at the grocery store?
Well, I've never really known who's supposed to put the divider between. And so I have.
So like between different customers.
You know, different customers, yeah. And so I didn't, because I didn't think about it. It was mostly just what it was. And then I get to the other side, and all of a sudden I'm seeing things go through that weren't mine. And I'm like, oh, those aren't mine. You know, proud of myself for like communicating a need that I have.
Because you said that in German, right?
Yeah. Well, you know.
Or said something.
Said something in German that was saying that's not mine. However that worked out. And then there's this whole other culturally thing. He's doing something, but then there was an item that they couldn't return. So he had to go do this whole new thing. And I'm like, oh no, I've never done that. What are they? I have to listen for a whole new set of words. And I think I slightly understood it. I understood hand motions. And I finally got all the things taken care of. But it's like, oh no, I got knocked off again.
I remember one of mine being showing up on a Sunday to catch a tram and realizing that the schedule is different. Mm-hmm. That instead of the trams coming every 5 minutes, they come every 10 minutes. And that was really stressful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Things like our internet has not been working the last couple of days and trying to figure out how do I navigate that. And, you know, the combination of devices I have, sometimes I'm able to translate things in line and sometimes I'm not. Like some of the apps, like I have an app for my internet provider and I don't have an easy way to translate it. But then, you know, I had a little win. I worked my way through the tutorial in German and I reset the router and all that. And then it still didn't work. Things like that. And now it's working. So that's exciting.
I think of one, I think I might have talked about it previously, but when Stephen and I were in Mali and we were taught how to say hello, but then they say hello differently, like 87 different ways. And I felt like a fool each time. So it's like, I just don't even know how to say hello. That's culturally stressful.
Yeah. I mean, they're endless, right? And a lot of it has to do with just thinking you know how something works and then you don't. And it's a culturally stressful incident. Sometimes it's not that, though. Sometimes you know exactly what's happening and it's still culturally stressful. For example, you're supposed to wait and not cross on red as a pedestrian. And sometimes you will be at the intersection you need to be at and your tram is coming and you see it coming and you're there, but you can't get to the tram because the light is red. And occasionally people will run, but it's like super frowned on, right, to get across when it's red. And that's stressful. And it's like, okay, in my culture, I would just run across the road and it would be fine. And I would catch the tram. Yesterday, we weren't trying to catch the tram, but yesterday we were waiting at one of these pedestrian crossings and saw two trams come and go. And I was like, that would be so frustrating if I was trying to get on one of those.
Because you know you're going to violate a cultural rule somewhere. I'm right. going to show up late and that's going to be culturally stressful.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm going to cross against red and that's culturally stressful.
Right. So it's not always about not knowing. Sometimes you do know what's happening and it's culturally stressful. And sometimes knowing what's happening makes it even more culturally stressful, right? You're like, I understand exactly what's happening and I don't like it.
Mm. In your book, you give kind of an example about distinguishing the difference between these culturally stressful things and then culture shock. Culturally stressful might be you show up in a culture where you have to eat a squid cooked in its own ink for the first time. And that's stressful because it maybe grosses you out if you aren't adventurous in what you eat. But then culture shock might be, man, I've been here now for 3 months and I can't find the ingredients to cook my comfort food. In what ways are you guys maybe seeing some of those stressors come into more of a cultural shock?
Yeah. So maybe I'll back up there just a moment, because one of the things that's really difficult in culture shock is that often people are experiencing culture shock without realizing it. So culturally stressful incidents, you're aware of immediately, right? It's like, ah, I can't believe that just happened, or I'm so frustrated or whatever. And culture shock, because it's this accumulation of small disorientations and accumulation, and sometimes big ones, but it's this accumulation over time, it often is difficult to point your finger at and say, that's culture shock. To the extent that often people are experiencing culture shock without having any idea that it's happening.
That's good.
I mean, even as we were reading through the list last week, it's like some of these don't...
The list of symptoms.
Some of them don't sound like they're abnormal behaviors, but it's when you stick in words like excessive. Can you tell when you're being by yourself excessively? Or when it turns into something that is not healthy for you, that's really hard to discern if you are, you know, on your own or you're a parent, trying to navigate your own health.
I think that's helpful because it may be almost impossible to be able to say, oh, this just transitioned into culture shock for me.
Yeah, no, it's usually more in reflection that a person realizes, wait, something more is going on here. So there's kind of often this general discomfort. I'm thinking of times recently where we have known that somebody needs to go to the grocery store because we need groceries. Here's a culturally stressful thing. Grocery stores are not open on Sunday, and we're not used to that yet. We're aware of it. We know that it happens, but there's still something about developing patterns that fit with that. So there's this culturally stressful piece. But then there's this thing that happens where on Saturday, we are tired from the week. And sometimes neither of us wants to press into the ambiguity of checking out at the grocery store. That in and of itself is not a big deal. It's the recognition that I'm actually not dealing with this issue with the full set of resources that I would normally have. It's realizing that I might actually find myself at 8:05 p.m. when the grocery store is closed, having not gone to the grocery store yet because I didn't have the emotional resources to make myself go do it. And that, you can't point at that and be like, that was a culturally stressful incident. Instead, what you're seeing is the fruit of all of that disorientation kind of finally ripening. I don't know, where you're like, okay, well, I guess we'll scrounge what we have still in the refrigerator and cupboards tomorrow, and Monday we'll go grocery shopping.
Yeah, no, I think that's really helpful because people are going to find themselves navigating through those predictable patterns of culture shock. And they'll come out of that enchantment and kind of enter into that disenchantment, discouragement, depression stage and find themselves there without maybe necessarily knowing, how did I get here? I took a wrong turn, but they really didn't. It's just, this is predictable. They're experiencing what is normal. And then the question is, what are healthy ways that people can navigate through culture shock?
I mean, I think again, just before that, it's this, it's so surprising that it's happened.
Right.
Because I loved being here, right? Like that's the feeling. I love being here. Or I was so sure that this is where I should be. It was so great to be here. And now, did I make a wrong choice?
That's especially true in our calling, where people can start to say, oh no, the way I'm feeling now is different. Maybe I misunderstood what I thought I had heard from God.
Right. Yeah. Especially if one of the ways that culture shock is playing out for you, one of the symptoms that we shared last week was that smoldering hostility toward people from the place that you're living, right? It's like, wait, I'm supposed to love these people and I have this smoldering hostility. Like those things don't seem to fit.
Or when we see our kids experiencing culture shock.
Yeah.
And we are like, oh no, my role as a parent is to protect them and I don't feel like I can.
I think, so to answer your question, I think one of the most important things that people can do to respond well to culture shock is to recognize that it's happening. It is surprising, it's no longer surprising, but the number of times that I've interacted with people who are going through culture shock, if you ask them, do you think you might be experiencing culture shock? They'll generally say no. And then you walk through the list of symptoms. And they'll generally say, oh, like I identify with a lot of those. And I think that's where some of this reflective practice becomes really important for recognizing even that it's happening. Because otherwise, you're left to make sense of what's happening with other frames, right? So things like, I must be so uncomfortable because I heard wrongly or I chose wrongly to come here. Or I must be so uncomfortable because I'm just a fragile person. Or I'm so uncomfortable because the people around me are so awful. And actually, none of those are usually particularly accurate. What's much more accurate is that you're dealing with this tremendous amount of accumulated stress.
And I think that's even a part of the idea of, it's not because you didn't know. We walked into moving across culture with our eyes wide open, knowing that there were hard things ahead of us, knowing that language is not easy, knowing that all of these things would be different. And we made the choice knowing that it would be hard. And so it was not that it was like this surprising occurrence to us that it was hard, or even that we didn't have tools for it, but it still happens. It still is a part of our experience.
And maybe that's another piece of it, is you don't prepare your way out of culture shock. I, in some ways, experiencing culture shock is a good sign that you're actually interacting with the host culture, that you haven't insulated yourself overly.
I think having navigated this with quite a few different people over the years and our time here in Berlin, one of the things that we're trying to work out on our team, our new Envision team now, is making sure that we're spending time checking in and asking those questions each week as we meet for our team meeting. And even though from a strictly business point of view, that decreases the amount of time we have to get things done, those how are you doing questions are so important to make sure that people are leaning into those times of being reflective and having to answer somebody else in a deeper than, oh, I'm fine, kind of way to help them figure out where am I in this process.
Yeah, sometimes just having a space to say I'm not okay and I'm not okay that I'm not okay is like really important.
As long as we on the other side don't interpret that as time for us to jump in and fix you, which tends to be my problem.
But sometimes that actually, I mean, so we'll talk a little bit, I think, about coping. Sometimes that can be really helpful. Sometimes you just need somebody to come and solve the problem of, there was something that you did.
Oh, it was the washing machine.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, we did our washing machine.
We're like, oh no.
Sounded like it was trying to, I mean, yeah. The thing was dancing across the floor. It was not healthy.
Not normal.
And we did not have the resources to deal with that. And you coming over and figuring it out and solving it was exactly what we needed. So sometimes that's super helpful.
And sometimes what's helpful, and it happened even this morning, is just the idea of coming in and saying, some days I feel like I can speak German better than others. And somebody saying, yeah, that's normal. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes these reminders that these really stressful situations are the same things that other people have gone through doesn't take away the stress sometimes,
right.
But it helps you orient yourself on the map and mm-hmm. say, okay, other people have survived through this.
I think some of the ways that navigating culture shock does, like, it doesn't go well when people refuse to acknowledge that they're experiencing culture shock, because that usually, I don't know, it seems to involve some kind of an ego defense thing, right? Like, well, I'm not a person who would experience culture shock. And that means probably you're not going to take advantage of the resources that you do have access to because of some kind of weird idea that it's a sign of weakness or something, rather than like, no, this is what happens, right? You move across cultures. It's tremendously disorienting. And the way that people respond to that is through this pattern that we have called culture shock.
I want to go down there and say, let's go back to coping when we're finished, because I think what you just said there is super important. It seems like in my generation, and especially my parents' generation, admitting that you were weak was just not done, especially sometimes even more so in Christian circles, mm-hmm. where God has given us a new mind meant, that means I shouldn't have things like depression. I shouldn't struggle with some of the symptoms from culture shock. But let's just normalize it a little bit. In your experience doing debriefs with short-term teams, mid-range teams, and debriefs with international workers, how many international workers experience some of the symptoms of culture shock?
I don't know of any that don't experience any. Right. Like it's like 100% experience some of it.
And how many of the symptoms?
Yeah. So that's the part that's really shocking. Sometimes I'll read through the list. So the list comes from L. Robert Coles, and then I've added some things into it as well, but I'll read through the list, and it is not at all uncommon for people to identify with 2/3 of the symptoms. In or more. And where people are like, whoa, I am apparently not okay, and I didn't realize the extent to which I'm not okay. I think I am much more concerned about people who refuse to acknowledge that they're experiencing either the symptoms of a culture shock or experiencing culture shock in general than I am about people who are experiencing it and know it, right? So somebody who's experiencing 2/3 of the symptoms of culture shock, he says, yeah, I'm really angry all the time and I'm exhausted all the time and, you know, on and on, right? And I feel like people are out to get me and I feel thwarted at every turn, you know, whatever. Okay, now we can work with that, right? But somebody who says, no, I'm fine, no problem, I'm sure this is where I'm supposed to be, like, I'm really concerned if people around them are observing that they're actually not okay and they're not willing to acknowledge that in themselves. That, among other things, means that they're likely not presenting the needs that they have to Christ either.
And it makes it harder.
So much harder for everybody.
Right. So back to coping, which I think we understand what that means, but sometimes it gets a negative spin. How are you managing in this situation? Well, I'm coping can sound really bad, right?
Yeah.
But if we're talking about coping mechanisms, what are we talking about?
It seems like there's a sense of tools, like that you have tools in your box to reorient or reevaluate where you're at.
And I think everybody has them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people don't always recognize in their normal culture what they're doing. When I was in the US, when I wanted to de-stress, I would go garden. And so gardening was just one of my coping mechanisms, or I'd go for a run. You know, there's mm-hmm. different ones that everybody has.
Right. Yeah. And I think that that's the starting place, right? You will cope. So the question is, how will you cope? Not, are you going to? Some people cope by denying that they're coping, right? But yeah, you're going to cope with the stress. It just is. So then how are you doing that? And if you recognize that you're going to cope, that you're going to try to make yourself feel better, then you can pay attention to how you're doing that and you can try to direct it. And I think that's really important. So one of the things that is useful is the better you know yourself, if you know you have certain tendencies, either toward things that are productive or things that are destructive, you know, things that are adaptive or things that are maladaptive, you can watch yourself do those things. Sometimes when my mom was experiencing stress, she would just start cleaning late into the night cleaning. It was not actually about the function of cleaning. It was about managing the stress. So you look at somebody cleaning late into the night and you think, okay, what is going on there? Well, that's coping, right? It's not destructive. It's not particularly constructive either, right? But if she knows that about herself, if somebody knows about themselves that when they're under stress, they clean late in the night and they find themselves cleaning late into the night, then that becomes kind of this little reminder, oh, hey, I'm doing that thing that I do and I'm not okay. I must not be feeling okay. There are other things like that. If you're a person who doom scrolls through social media when you're not doing okay and you find yourself doom scrolling through social media, it's like, okay, probably you're not okay. And that's good to know about yourself because then you can redirect it. But just recognizing that it's happening can be so important. And then there are really healthy ways that you can try to direct coping. So things like going for a walk or some kind of creative outlet, or, you know, there's those kinds of things that can be really helpful.
I think there's even the struggle of, like, so if you're in a place that it's not okay for you to go for a walk by yourself, like, or you're in a country where all of a sudden your coping tools are taken away from you, that's a whole other struggle to figure out, you know, do you have the people in your life to be able to navigate that? To work through different ideas.
And to plan ahead of time. A number of times had students in places where it's not okay for them to go running by themselves, and that's something that they really value. So what are we going to do instead? Mm-hmm. And pre-planning some of that.
There are at times positive influences from stress. You know, a paper is due, and the stress from that deadline motivates me to get something done. But I think in most cases, stress has a negative effect. And so these coping mechanisms help us counteract those negative influences from stress. And what I've seen in my own life is if I don't have a positive way to deal with that stress, I will find a negative way. Mm-hmm. And so that's sometimes important for people to realize coming into an intercultural situation, if your normal positive way of handling stress is taken away, and chances are it will be different. You have to be aware of the degenerative ways that you will engage into a coping mechanism, and which is why I think you do see a lot of international workers then locking into some fairly negative patterns, whether that's pornography or whether that's an over-obsession with Facebook or social media.
Or even just with being right.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things of like, I have to be right, or sometimes a competitiveness or things that, like, in and of themselves, like on their face may not be negative, but taken to extremes can be really damaging to people around them.
So I think there's an EQ part of that. Can I recognize when I'm negatively coping or the impact that's having on other people? There's also a vulnerability piece of that. Am I willing to let other people speak into my life and say, I see some negative patterns emerging?
When people find themselves drawn toward their vices, and there are all sorts of different vices, but when you find yourself drawn toward that, if you can have a little check, you know, either with other people or with yourself to say, okay, that I am being drawn toward that thing means that I don't feel okay. And if you can use that as a diagnostic and not be terribly disappointed with yourself for having temptations, like, well, of course you have temptation, you're under stress and you want to feel better, right? Like, okay, so then, but you're not feeling okay. So let's deal with that. That can be very helpful and very healthy But sometimes the shame around even feeling temptation can be overwhelming and keep people from getting help that they need. I think even some of the, journaling can be really, really good. Artistic expression of all sorts of different kinds can be really good. Music. And then even healthy things like, healthy is a funny word for what I'm about to say, getting pizza, right? If you're a person who likes pizza and you're in a place where you can't get pizza very often, go get a pizza, right? Finding ways to be okay. So we've been in a couple of times, people that we're connected to have gone to watch an English language movie, and we've been holding off.
Like seeing it in a theater.
Yeah, holding off on this. Like, okay, at some point we're going to be just feeling crummy and we're going to go watch an English language film in a theater.
I remember one of the people in our organization at a higher level saying, as he was preparing us to go to the field, don't forget to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Find a comedian you like, listen to their stuff, and because that can reduce stress. For me, one of the things was, what is it about the hobbies that I used to have that relieved stress? I had to find what it was about making and gardening that relieved stress for me, and then find a similar hobby, a parallel hobby for me here.
And I think that's the hard part, is because so right now I have a started yarn project, and I started it about a month ago, and it's still sitting there, and I look at it and I'm like, I really want to do that, but the amount of energy like that it can take sometimes to be like, oh, that, like, I know that there's goodness in that, but it's like, where are you at in the spectrum of energy and space and capacity to do the things that feel better than doom scrolling on your phone? Yeah. So what do you put in the place of, you know, the thing that feels productive and feels like soul enriching until you're ready for that? Like,
I think one other piece that we haven't said overtly, so I'll just say it, is often this culture shock is a really difficult time for a person's spiritual journey. And prayer often will feel empty. Worship often will feel kind of detached. It's not uncommon for people to feel like God is super distant in the midst of the transition. And so I think from the outside, it can look like, wow, that person, I thought they were so spiritual or whatever, you know. What's wrong with
them? Or for you to think about yourself. I thought I had a meaningful relationship with God.
Yeah, and then it's like, but what happened? You know, or is my God only in America? You know, and sometimes there is a theological problem where we've attached ourselves to a version of God that is less than who God is. But there is this reality that, and I'll put it this way. I think we talked about this in terms of the transition process as well. But it's really important to just know that there are certain things that are true about you, whether or not you feel like they're true. So in the midst of coping, like I need to just know that I am a husband and a father and that I'm a child of God, right? And it doesn't matter if I feel like any of those things are true. I mean, it does matter, of course, practically, right? Like, it matters to how I feel about things. But I need to have made certain decisions ahead of time based on just knowing this is who I am. And so therefore certain things are true about me and what I will and won't do in the world. And then when things get hard and fuzzy, there are just certain decisions you don't let yourself make. And I often have encouraged people who are getting ready to go into culture shock, don't make any big decisions right while you're in that, like, because you're probably not seeing the world nearly as clearly as you think you are. It's generally not a great time to get in a relationship. It's generally not a great time to get out of a relationship. It's generally not a great time to make big business decisions, right? Like just let yourself get through it. Knowing who you are and having ways to remember that can help coping be a healthier process.
This podcast was produced by Envision Berlin in our studios located in Berlin, Germany. If you'd like to send us a note, feel free to send your email to podcast@envisionberlin.com. Thanks for listening.